Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
You're listening to Luke's English Podcast. For more information, visit teacherluke.co.uk.
And now for something completely different.
Monty Python, the Flying Circus.
Hello, you!
And welcome to another episode of Luke's English Podcast. This one is all about British comedy. And so I think it's very appropriate for me to adopt a serious tone, a sober approach to such an important and relevant subject as British comedy. So that's why I'm speaking in this serious voice, because it would be inappropriate for me to be kind of frivolous or to kind of try and make jokes and things like that. No, that would be inappropriate, because this is an episode about British comedy. So it's very important that this is dealt with in a serious, matter-of-fact way, because it's such a serious subject that that's really the only way that I can talk about it, isn't it? I mean, I have done other episodes about British comedy before, and so you'll know now that this is obviously a very important, significant aspect of the cultural heritage of the United Kingdom. And I think that every person who knows anything about British life, people who live in the country, leading civil servants, judges, politicians, they all have a fine appreciation and an understanding of the sensitive nature and cultural significance of British. And that's why I'm doing this episode. All right, so this episode is the next in the series about British comedy. And I had to do an episode about Monty Python, didn't I? I actually had to. I was forced to by gangsters. They were like, you gotta do, if you don't do an episode about Monty Python's Flying Circus, we're going to break your legs, you understand? So I had to do an episode about Monty Python. I mean, not just because I was being threatened by gangsters, but just because they're such an important, popular and celebrated part of our comedy history here in Britain. They're very well rated by lots of people. Some say they're overrated. I don't think they're overrated. I think they're brilliant. So, you know what I'm talking about, right? Monty Python's Flying Circus. They were a group of comedians who made TV shows in the 60s and 70s, and they made some films in the 70s and 80s, and they made CDs, and they did live shows, and also they did a musical as well, which is called Spamalot. You've probably seen their stuff on the internet. You might also know that right now they are doing a reunion tour. I'll tell you more about it in a minute. I just wanted to establish that, you know, just who Monty Python were. I like almost all of their comedy. They've been very influential on popular culture in general, but more specifically on the plenty of other comedians and TV shows in the UK and the USA as well. For example, The Simpsons and South Park were very influenced by Monty Python. I mean, not just The Simpsons and South Park, it's everyone really, but certainly those two shows probably wouldn't even exist without the work that was done by Monty Python's Flying Circus. Also, as I just mentioned, this year they are in the middle of a comeback tour. They're putting on stage performances of their greatest material live at the O2 Arena in London. Live performances of their show will be broadcast in cinemas around the world too. So check out the website for more information if you want to see it. There might be a cinema near you that is showing a live broadcast of their reunion tour. So check out MontyPythonLive.com and you can find out some info. Personally, I'd love to see the reunion tour, but I'm actually quite happy watching their sketches and movies and just listening to the records on my MP3 player as I walk around. I'm really, really happy. Is that clear? I'm really happy, okay? I'm really happy to share my love of Python with you. Some of you will already know about them. Some of you won't. I've already played you some of their stuff before on the podcast, including sketches like the Four Yorkshiremen sketch. Remember that? The Four Yorkshiremen? That was the one about, well, four Yorkshiremen sitting around. That was in an early episode of Luke's English podcast. And that's the one where there are four Yorkshiremen and they're sitting around going, oh, kids today, you know, they don't know if they're born, do they? When I was young, we were lucky to have a price of a cup of tea. And the other one would say, aye, cup of cold tea and all in a crack cup. Yeah, you were lucky to have a cup. We used to drink our tea out of a rolled up newspaper. Newspaper, you were lucky. You know, and it just sort of escalated from there. Remember that sketch? There was also the argument sketch. Remember that one from an earlier episode of Luke's English podcast? The argument sketch is the one that has a man going into an office because he wants to pay to have an argument with someone. And he goes in, hello, is this the right room for an argument? Well, I told you once. No, you haven't. Yes, I have. When? Just now. No, you didn't. Yes, I did. Sorry, is this the 5 minute argument or the full half hour? Just the 5 minutes. Now, where were we? I definitely told you. No, you didn't. And so on. That was the argument sketch. Then we also had other ones like Swamp Castle. Remember that? About the prince and the king in Swamp Castle. And the king is saying things like, now listen, lad, In half an hour, you're going to marry the daughter of the... I can't remember it. I do remember it. It's the one about the young prince and his father wants him to marry some woman, but the prince doesn't care. He's just more interested in singing. Remember that? Also, there was the silly election. The silly election, that was the one from the episode about voting and elections. Did you listen to all of that episode? If you did, then you would have heard a very funny sketch making fun of election coverage on TV. Oh, God. Oh, it was good. So I'm sure that you're already pretty familiar with Monty Python. Anyway, this episode really should be your go-to guide for everything that you need to know about Monty Python. Okay, everything that you need to know about Monty Python's Flying Circus. And in my opinion, you do need to know about Monty Python's Flying Circus. So you can use this episode to make sure that you're fully clued up about this essential part of modern British culture. I could go on and 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 on. I could go like that. I could go. I could do that for ages. I could just go on and on and on and on and on about this for ages, talking about how special their comedy is to me personally and to plenty of other people. I could go on and on. Right, I could go on about it for ages, but instead, I think it's best to just go straight to their comedy, as quickly as possible in this episode and let it speak for itself. I realise that by talking about it a lot, I'm just building it up, and then eventually when you do hear their comedy, you might find it a bit anticlimactic. But nevertheless, I do think it's important to explain certain key things about Monty Python, all right? Like the basics, the stuff that you need to know. to be able to then have a conversation about it, or just to know enough about Monty Python to appreciate its position in British history, and not just British cultural history, but the cultural history of the English language, in fact. So after I've explained a few things about Python, we're also going to spend some time listening to some of their sketches. In fact, most of this episode will be devoted to listening to their work, and I'm going to pick it apart, explain it to you, explain bits of language that you're going to hear in those sketches. After... No, not after. Okay. I'll explain things so that excuse me, what's happened to my English? I don't know. Sometimes right, let me start that sentence again. I'll explain things so that you understand it all fully, just like a native speaker, and a native speaker who gets all of the jokes. Hopefully this will just be one single episode of the podcast. I'll try and keep it brief. It's difficult. In a way, this is one of the hardest episodes of Luke's English Podcast that I've ever done. I've been trying to do an episode about Monty Python for ages, right? I've been thinking about it. I've been planning it. I've even started the episode a few times and then abandoned it because I just couldn't quite get it right. A challenge that's eluded me a few times, probably because I just love Python so much and I want to do it justice in an episode, but really I can never do it justice. I could never really communicate how much I like Monty Python. You're just going to have to believe me, all right? You're just going to have to go with me on it. That's why it's been hard to do an episode about Monty Python. I've just been struggling to like choose the right sketches, struggling to pick the right information to tell you so that you understand the significance of it all. But never mind that. I'm just going to get straight down to it. All right. It's really hard to choose a sketch. I like all of them too much. I also realize that you might not find it funny, but that's fine. Never mind. The main thing is that you learn some things about culture and some language, and if you find it funny, that's a bonus, isn't it? So do not expect to find any of this funny. Okay. No fun in this episode. That's it. No fun, no laughs, no enjoyment, just simple, cold, pragmatic language and cultural understanding. No fun, oh God, no. All right, don't expect any laughter. In fact, if you do laugh, then you should be ashamed of yourself. Honestly, unbelievable behaviour. What kind of person enjoys themselves listening to comedy? Especially comedy. Don't ask me why I'm saying it like that. I really don't know. I just decided I'd do it like that, just for a bit of fun, you know. Because sometimes it's a bit. Sometimes it's fun just to speak in different voices, isn't it? I don't know what this voice is. It's just some sort of bloke from the north of England. Not sure where he's from. Anyway, tell you what, I do love that Monty Python. Oh, it's fantastic. You know what I think? I think it's one of the finest examples of comedy that you can find. Okay, I'm fine, ladies and gentlemen. I'm fine, I promise. I'm just excited because I like this subject of this episode. Okay? All right. So here is everything you need to know about Monty Python's Flying Circus, and perhaps some of the things that you don't really need to know as well, but I'm just going to tell them to you anyway. So who are they? Right, Monty Python, six guys, six people, six comedians. They started in the late 1960s, but who are those six people? You've got John Cleese, Graham Chapman, Eric Idle, Michael Palin, Terry Jones and Terry Gilliam. Okay, John Cleese, Graham Chapman, Eric Idle, Michael Palin, Terry Jones and Terry Gilliam. Where were they from? Well, the five of them were from England. Four of them were from England. That's John Cleese, Graham Chapman, Eric Idle and Michael Palin. They were English. Terry Jones was Welsh and Terry Gilliam, American. All right. Terry Gilliam, you might know, is a famous movie director. He did things like 12 Monkeys and Fear and Loathing in Las Vegas, Time Bandits. Fantastic director, brilliant films. He was also the animator.
the artist for the Pythons. So you'll know that a lot of their movies and TV shows featured lots of animation. Well, Terry Gilliam was the guy responsible for it. Brilliant animation, completely insane, like incredibly talented work, very, very funny, wild, brilliant stuff. The other Pythons, of course, were all brilliant in their own ways. Maybe we'll get a chance to go into that in a minute. Why are they called Monty Python's Flying Circus? Well, there's no particular reason. I mean, it doesn't mean anything really. I think they just liked the sound of the name. Monty Python is a made-up person. I think the idea was that Monty Python would be some sort of talent agent or something. But it really doesn't mean anything. It's just a funny sounding name. That's all, and it does sort of represent the kind of craziness of this comedy group. So the name doesn't really, it's not really that important. It's just that it's a kind of wacky name, you know. Where did they come from? Well, I've told you which sort of nationalities they were, but most of them met while studying at university. Either they went to Cambridge or Oxford universities. So, as I said, very educated types, very kind of intellectual in a way. And they performed comedy as part of their university entertainment programs. Cambridge has got a very famous comedy scene. It's called the Footlights Club, and the Footlights Club has given us lots and lots of famous comedians over the years. So they came out of the Oxbridge University comedy scenes. They went into doing TV and radio and stuff. John Cleese was probably the most famous of the group, after having worked with people like I think he worked with Peter Cook on some things. We know about Peter Cook. He was in the previous episode about comedy, and so you know all about him. Right, so they kind of emerged from the university comedy scene, and eventually the six of them kind of got together. Gilliam, I think, met John Cleese when John did some work in America. He met up with Gilliam, and later on, Gilliam found his way over to England, and they ended up becoming a group of six. What did they do? Well, after doing stage shows and various other features on other TV shows, they managed to, as a group, get a contract to do a BBC comedy show. I think they had something like a contract for 12 episodes of a comedy show, and it was called Monty Python's Flying Circus, and they wrote all of the sketches themselves. They performed all of it themselves. At that time, at the end of the 1960s, the BBC was a very, very different place. And for some reason, they were just given a lot of freedom. The producers just said, okay, yeah, there you go. You go off and make 12 episodes and off you go. They weren't sort of subject to lots of restrictions or lots of control from the BBC. Instead, they were just allowed to kind of go and make the shows. And they made them, and they were broadcast on TV, and not many people saw them at the first, but in those days on the BBC, in fact, in those days in Britain, there were only about three TV channels, and most of the content on TV was very boring, very sort of conservative stuff. And Monty Python's Flying Circus burst onto people's television sets at the end of the 60s, and it kind of, I guess it was like For people who watched it, it must have blown their minds, because it was so radical and so crazy, and it broke all of the rules. It was so colourful and ridiculous and stupid and intellectual and anarchic and genuinely funny, that I think it really captured the imagination of the sort of younger generation. Now, we know in Britain at that time, there was the kind of the peace movement, the alternative movement, the counterculture movement that we associate with certain types of music. You know, we think of the music that the Beatles were producing, the Rolling Stones, and all the other kinds of progressive rock music and avant-garde stuff. Well, I think that the Monty Python's Flying Circus managed to do the same thing for comedy, or certainly for television entertainment. And so if you were just watching TV one night and you happened to find an episode of Monty Python's Flying Circus, at the time it would have been so radically different that it I think a lot of people just didn't know what was going on. And it must have been very exciting to watch, because in their shows, literally, you felt like anything could happen, you know? All sorts of things would happen. It wasn't just a standard sketch show. They broke the rules of TV comedy by playing with the formats. It was very postmodern. They took the standard sort of structure of TV comedy and twisted it, made it self-referential, and, you know, very ironic, playing around with the conventions of television entertainment. So it must have been a big shock. And certainly at the beginning, it didn't really catch on. But I think it became a sort of counterculture thing that some people watched it who understood it and they got it. Probably younger people who felt, you know, they were on the same wavelength as these guys. They're the ones who really got it. So I think at the beginning, it was just something that only a few people got, and they would see each other maybe at work or at college or something the next day after having watched it the night before, and they'd say, hey, did you see that show on BBC last night? What was that? That was amazing, wasn't it? And so it kind of started to develop like that, just with a few like-minded people watching the show. And because the BBC weren't quite as strict about their content in those days, they were the Pythons were allowed to just get away with all kinds of crazy stuff that these days they wouldn't be allowed to get away with. Also, certain people, like, for example, George Harrison of the Beatles, saw it and loved it. And so he told lots of people about it, and I think that was good publicity for them too. What was so special about it? Why did people like it so much? Well, I think I've just explained that. But as well as it being kind of radical and crazy and apparently random, I think it was also just very funny. The performances were great. I mean, these guys were just naturally funny people. John Cleese, very tall, kind of quite strange looking, very serious performer, and yet very ridiculous. He would bring the gravity and the seriousness of a barrister to ridiculous comedy performances, and it was very impressive to watch. He's got like a quite funny shaped body, you know, he's kind of tall and thin and very physical performer. Michael Palin was able to really take on all sorts of different types of character. He could be sort of cheeky, he could be mischievous, and cute as well. Eric Idle, a naturally funny performer, a great writer of jokes. And Terry Jones also was a great writer and someone who was willing to just do anything to be funny. Graham Chapman as well was a very interesting guy because, again, he came from this kind of middle class Oxbridge educated background. But you got the sense that underneath all of that, there was a kind of crazy person who didn't care for a convention at all. And he just wanted to make people laugh. And his personal life was really a little bit crazy and a bit out of control. Apparently, he was quite a heavy drinker. He was an alcoholic, which is a pity because I think it affected his health. And also, he was a homosexual. He was gay. Not that that has anything to do with anything, but he's just an interesting character who it somehow is like part. I think that's part of the charm of this group, that there were wildly different personalities, but when they got together, they complemented each other so well that the result is like great entertainment. Who else have I not mentioned? Terry Gilliam. Well, I've talked about him being the outsider, the American amongst all of these educated Brits, with the incredible visual sensibility as well, and the spirit, the kind of rebel spirit, I think Terry Gilliam has. I think he brought that into the mix as well. Have I mentioned them all? Cleese, Chapman, Eric Idle, Michael Palin, Terry Jones and Terry Gilliam. Yes. So the performances, the writing was good. I mean, they just wrote original and intelligent comedy. I mean, it was original, although that kind of comedy, that sort of slightly anarchic stuff had been done before by people like the Goons. That was a group of three comedians: Spike Milligan, Peter Sellers, and Harry Secombe. The Goons did an amazing show called The Goon Show. It was a radio show, and it was totally insane. And this, I think it inspired lots of people, including the Beatles. Jimi Hendrix was a huge fan of The Goon Show as well. He used to listen to it on radio when he lived in England. And, of course, the Pythons were very influenced by The Goons as well, particularly Spike Milligan. I think he was the one who kind of wrote most of the Goons material, and also other comedians like Peter Cook, who I've mentioned before, were doing a similar kind of thing as the Pythons, but somehow the Pythons managed to just do this kind of comedy in an accessible and vibrant way, and it made them big stars. The animations I've told you about, the level of intelligence combined with the readiness to be completely stupid as well. What effect has their work had on culture in general? Well, I mean, as you know, apart from just influencing generations of comedians and TV shows, both in England and you know, both in Britain, the UK, and in the USA. I think also just like something about their sensibility has entered into people's minds. Everyone in Britain knows a little bit about the Pythons. Some of their sketches, some of the phrases from their sketches are part of people's language, part of people's vernacular. Many people know a lot of the scripts from Monty Python sketches off by heart, and they seem to just come up every now and then in conversation. Even politicians, like Margaret Thatcher, once quoted a Monty Python sketch in one of her speeches. So you get the idea of just how sort of how entrenched Monty Python is in British culture. What does their comedy tell us about the British sense of humour? I think maybe partly this has helped to create this stereotype that British humour is surreal and strange and difficult to understand. I mean, it's not all surreal and strange. I think Python humour is surreal and intellectual and conceptual and a bit odd. And so that may make people think that all British comedy is like that. What are some of the most famous Monty Python moments? The most famous Monty Python moments? Well, I mean, these are questions that I wrote to myself earlier. There are lots of famous Monty Python moments. I should probably just tell you about the work that they've done. They did four series of the TV show, which was on the BBC in the 60s and 70s. They also did a show in German, I believe. They filmed some of their sketches in German, and they made it in Germany. They were very popular there. They also made a number of feature films. The first one was called Monty Python and the Holy Grail, which was all about King Arthur and the Knights of the Round Table from Camelot. It was set in medieval England in the 12th century, and it featured King Arthur and his knights traveling around medieval England searching for the Holy Grail. And basically it was an excuse to make lots of very silly sketches around a medieval theme. And it's brilliant. It's one of my favourite films, in my opinion. I think it's very funny. They also that film, Monty Python and the Holy Grail, was made very cheaply, and it was written, filmed, and performed by the team themselves. The money for that movie actually came from rock bands. So it was very hard for them to get money to produce this strange film. They managed to convince Pink Floyd and Led Zeppelin to actually give some of the money towards the production of this film. So if it wasn't for Pink Floyd and Led Zeppelin, this film wouldn't have been made. I think that's really cool. I mean, that's just brilliant. You can see how this film is part of that kind of awesome culture, you know, with the music and all that kind of thing. They made another film called The Life of Brian, and that film was produced by a company called Handmade Films, and Handmade Films was owned by George Harrison of the Beatles. After being in the Beatles, he, you know, had his own music career, but he also set up a film production company, Handmade Films, and Handmade Films was responsible for some really, really great British films, including The Life of Brian. So thanks to George Harrison, this film was made. Life of Brian, they also did another one called The Meaning of Life. And they did a number of albums, like audio albums, which you can get, and they're great. And they did live theatre shows. They did a big theatre show at the Hollywood Bowl, and that's available. You can get that on DVD, and it's brilliant. What else have they done? They more recently, the stage show, the musical Spamalot came out, which is a kind of Monty Python themed musical. And now, of course, they're doing the reunion tour. I'm sure there are other things that I haven't mentioned, but those are the basic things. So let's move on to sketches, and I want to play you at least one, it might, and more if possible, but I'd like to let you listen to at least one comedy sketch by Python, because as I've said, it's all very good me just banging on about them like this, but really we should let their comedy speak for itself. So I've kind of created a list of some of my favorite sketches, and there's no way that I can do them all. I can present them all to you and teach you the language in them. There's just not enough time. So I might have to do other episodes on this subject in the future. The list of sketches I took from the videos that they have presented on their YouTube channel. Okay, so Monty Python has its own YouTube channel. I strongly suggest that you check it out. You can find a link to it on my webpage for this episode. I also strongly suggest that you buy their work too, okay? Please do. Please purchase some of their stuff. I really strongly suggest it because it's very good. It's great, and you won't regret it. So there's a list on Amazon of pretty much everything that you can purchase by Monty Python's Flying Circus. And again, you'll find a link to that on my webpage for this episode. My particular favourites, and the ones that I would recommend that you buy on DVD or CD or download or whatever, Monty Python and the Holy Grail, The Life of Brian, Live at the Hollywood Bowl, and the audio recording of Monty Python Live at Drury Lane in London. Don't bother with the whole box set of the TV show unless you're a hardcore fan, because to be honest, some of the stuff on the TV show is not very funny. I mean, they had to fill sort of hours of TV with sketches, and some sketches are a bit, I mean, the shows are a bit hit and miss. So in one half an hour sketch, you might get two or three classic sketches, but then the other stuff is kind of like, you know, not that funny. So I wouldn't bother with the TV show box set, because you'll have to watch lots of fairly unfunny stuff before you get to the really good stuff. What you could do is just check out their videos on the YouTube channel, which is a sort of like best of compilation. There is a DVD as well, which is called The Best of Monty Python's Flying Circus, and that's a good one to get. I'll probably come back to Python sketches in the future, as I said, because there's no way I can cover everything in this episode. To be honest, I'll be lucky to get through more than two sketches in this podcast. I'd like to just remind you, please do not find anything funny. Please do not laugh. Do not smile. Okay? Don't smile when listening to this. Not even now. Don't even now. No, don't smile. Good. Right, I think we're going to start with the sketch that everybody knows. It's their most famous sketch. It's not necessarily their funniest sketch. In fact, there are plenty of people out there who don't find it funny at all. I like it, but I've just seen it so many times. I've heard it so many times. I think I know the entire script off by heart. In fact, I'm not alone. There are plenty of people all across the UK and the USA who could recite this sketch from start to finish. And they would. They probably will if you ask them. So the dead parrot sketch. Now, you might, as I said, you might not find it funny, but let's listen to it, and then I'll explain it for you. All right, I'm going to shut up now, and now I'll let you listen to the dead parrot sketch. Essentially, what happens is a man comes into a pet shop. He's purchased a parrot. You know, a parrot, a bird that talks. Hello, hello, pretty Polly. A parrot, right? He bought a parrot. And he's taken it back to the pet shop because he wants to complain. What's the complaint? Well, the complaint is that the parrot is dead. All right. And the shopkeeper is a kind of untrustworthy character who's trying to convince the guy that the parrot's not dead. In fact, it's just resting. And that's basically the basis of the sketch, that one guy's trying to say, no, it is dead, it's definitely dead. And the other one's saying, no, it's not dead, no, it's just resting. And that's it. That's basically the premise of this sketch. The thing I like about it is the things I like are the writing and the performance. But you have to make up your own mind. As you can now listen to the Dead Parrot's sketch.
Hello, I wish to register a complaint. Hello, miss?
What do you mean, miss?
Oh, I'm sorry, I have a cold. I wish to make a complaint.
Sorry, we're closing for lunch.
Never mind that, my lad. I wish to complain about this parrot what I purchased not half an hour ago from this very boutique.
Oh, yes, the Norwegian Blue. What's wrong with it?
I'll tell you what's wrong with it. It's dead. That's what's wrong with it.
No, it's resting. Look.
Look, my lad, I know a dead parrot when I see one, and I'm looking at one right now.
No, it's not dead, it's resting.
Resting?
Yeah. Remarkable bird, the Norwegian Blue. Beautiful plumage, isn't it?
The plumage don't enter into it. It's stone dead.
No, it's resting.
All right, then. If it's resting, I'll wake it up. Hello, Polly. I got a nice cuttlefish for you when you wake up, Polly Parrot.
There, it moved.
No, it didn't. That was you pushing the cage.
I did not.
Yes, you did. Hello, Polly. Polly. Polly Parrot, wake up. Polly. Now, that's what I call a dead parrot.
No, it's stunned.
Look, my lad, I've had just about enough of this. That parrot is definitely deceased. And when I bought it not half an hour ago, you assured me that its lack of movement was due to it being tired and shagged out after a long squat.
It's got me pining for the fjords.
Pining for the fjords? What kind of talk is that? Look, where did it fall flat on its back the moment I got it home?
The Norwegian Blue prefers kipping on its back. It's a beautiful bird, lovely plumage.
Look, I took the liberty of examining that parrot, and I discovered that the only reason that it had been sitting on its perch in the first place was that it had been nailed there.
Well, of course it was nailed there, otherwise it muscled up to those bars and boom!
Look, matey. This parrot wouldn't boom if I put 4,000 bolts through it. It's bleeding demise.
It's not. It's pining.
It's not pining. It's passed on. This parrot is no more. It has ceased to be. It's expired and gone to meet its maker. This is a late parrot. It's a stiff. Bereft of life, it rests in peace. If you hadn't nailed it to the perch, it would be pushing up the daisies. It's run down the curtain and joined the choir invisible. This is an ex-parrot.
Well, I better replace it then.
If you want to get anything done in this country, you've got to complain to your blue in the mouth.
Sorry, Gov, we're right out of parrots.
I see. I get the picture.
I've got a slug.
Does it talk?
Not really, no.
Well, it's scarcely a replacement then, is it?
All right, there you go. That's it. I mean, that sketch does continue, but I'm stopping it there. That's a good place to stop. And I know what you might be thinking. You might be thinking, it's not that funny, Luke. It's just sort of people just shouting and, you know, the audience was laughing, but I didn't find it funny. That's absolutely fine. I told you, didn't I? I told you. You're not supposed to find it funny. We're just learning, okay? We're just learning. You can't expect to find it funny instantly. Let me explain a few things, and then maybe you'll have a better chance next time. Also, I'm going to play you a live version of that performance, which I find much funnier, and we'll see about that in a minute, all right? So, how much did you understand? What did you get from that? Now, if you didn't find it funny, as I said, that's fine, because there's plenty of language, lovely, chunky, meaty language for us to feast on in this sketch. So let's go through it again, and I'm going to explain the language for you. All right? Good.
Hello,
Hello, I wish to register a complaint.
Hello, I wish to register a complaint. There you go. There's a bit of language already. You can register a complaint or make a complaint. Excuse me, I'd like to make a complaint, please. I'd like to register a complaint. It's a slightly more formal way. Hello, I'd like to register a complaint, please. So you can see that this character is already a rather formal person. He's a bit of a formal, sort of stuffy person who takes himself very seriously. Okay, I wish to register a complaint.
Hello, miss.
What do you mean, miss?
I'm sorry, I have a cold.
Okay, so he doesn't get the attention of the guy in the shop. So he says, hello, miss. So that's a bit strange because he seems to think that the person in the shop is a woman, but he's clearly a man. So it's a bit odd that. But that's just, you know, it's just Python. It's just random. Hello, miss. And he says, what do you mean, miss? And then it seems the guy realizes that this is a man, and his excuse is, oh, I'm sorry, I have a cold. As if having a cold is a good enough excuse for misidentifying someone's gender. All right? So anyway, there you go. Excuse me, I wish to register a complaint. Hello, miss? What do you mean, miss? Oh, I'm sorry, I have a cold. Anyway, all right.
What do you mean, miss?
I'm sorry, I have a cold. I wish to make a complaint.
Sorry, we're closing for lunch.
Never mind that, my lad. I wish to complain about this parrot what I purchased not half an hour ago from this very boutique.
I wish to complain about this parrot what I purchased not half an hour ago from this very boutique. So you can see that his language is, like, ridiculously formal. I mean, no one really speaks like that unless you're some sort of formal tosser, you know? I wish to complain about this parrot, what I purchased not half an hour ago from this very boutique. Now, it's not a boutique, it's a shop. So he's using this sort of formal language. He obviously thinks that he's very important. His complaint is not going to be successful, it seems. But he's ready to argue.
Oh, yes, the Norwegian blue. What's wrong with it?
I'll tell you what's wrong with it.
Oh, yes, the Norwegian blue. So the shopkeeper's kind of casual. Oh, yes, the Norwegian blue. Apparently, the name of this parrot is the Norwegian blue. But it's ridiculous because you don't have parrots in Norway. Anyways, oh, yes, the Norwegian blue. What's the problem? And he goes, I'll tell you what's wrong with it. It's dead. That's what's wrong with it.
Oh, yes, the Norwegian blue. What's wrong with it?
I'll tell you what's wrong with it. It's dead. That's what's wrong with it.
Okay, I should say just now, I'm going to find it very challenging to try and explain what's funny about this, okay? It's very hard to explain what's funny about the parrot sketch. It could be something to do with just the timing, the way that the characters react to each other, the attitudes of the two characters, the fact that it's a ridiculous situation that they're arguing about whether this parrot is dead or not. The fact that it's a parrot a parrot is a fairly funny animal, I suppose. But it's hard to say in a sort of objective way exactly what's funny about it. First of all, maybe it's just the level of surprise, you know, the fact that they start arguing about whether or not it's dead, or the problem with the parrot being that it's dead. I mean, that's quite a funny premise. But maybe it's just the surprise of learning that they're arguing about a dead parrot. After listening to it again and again and again, you start to just enjoy the carefully written script and the way in which they emphasize parts of the script as well. But there aren't specific jokes. There aren't like word jokes or anything going on here. It's more just attitude and surprise and things like that.
What's wrong with it?
I'll tell you what's wrong with it. It's dead. That's what's wrong with it.
No, it's resting. Look.
Look, my lad, I know a dead parrot when I see one, and I'm looking at one right now.
No, it's not dead, it's resting.
Okay, completely pathetic excuse. Oh, no, it's not dead, it's just resting. I mean, it's like the worst excuse you've ever heard, isn't it? It's the worst, most pathetic attempt to try and persuade the guy that the parrot's not dead. I mean, it's obviously dead. Oh, no, it's just resting. And the guy's got no chance of convincing him of this. But, you know, he's going to try it anyway, just because he's a dishonest pet shop owner. Okay?
Resting?
Yeah. Remarkable bird, the Norwegian blue. Beautiful plumage, isn't it?
Now he tries to distract the customer by referring to the beautiful plumage of the bird. you know. Oh, no, it's not dead. It's just resting. Resting. Remarkable bird, isn't it? The Norwegian blue. Beautiful plumage. Plumage is the feathers and the colour of the feathers. So if a bird has beautiful plumage, you're talking about the way its feathers look and the colour of its feathers. All right. It's a remarkable bird, though, isn't it? The Norwegian blue. Beautiful plumage.
The plumage don't enter into it. It's stone dead.
No, it's resting.
The plumage don't enter into it, meaning the plumage doesn't enter into it. The plumage don't enter into it. So that's interesting. That's like a grammar mistake, but it's the sort of grammar mistake that certain type of native English speaker might make. A sort of citizen of Greater London might use that kind of grammar. The plumage don't enter into it. Meaning the plumage doesn't enter into it, meaning the plumage has got nothing to do with it. The plumage is not important, it's irrelevant, okay? Because this parrot's dead.
All right, then. If it's resting, I'll wake it up. Hello, Polly. I got a nice cuttlefish for you when you wake up, Polly Parrot.
There, it moved.
No, it didn't.
So here the customer plays devil's advocate, saying, okay, all right, well, if it's resting, I'll wake it up then, shall I? And he starts shouting, hello, Polly! So Polly is a typical name for a parrot. I think it's from an old pirate adventure story, maybe. Or it's just a very typical name for a parrot. Hello, Polly! I've got a nice cuttlefish for you. A cuttlefish is a sort of typical bit of food that you would give to a parrot. All right, I've got a nice cuttlefish for you. And then at this point, Michael Palin, who is playing the shopkeeper, pushes the cage and goes, look, it moved. So it's like a really bad attempt at trying to make it look like the parrot moves. He pushes the cage. Look, it moved.
That was you pushing the cage.
I did not.
Yes, you did. Hello, Polly. Polly. Polly Parrot, wake up. Polly.
Now that's what I call a dead parrot. Now he says that after he's, obviously shouted in the ear of the parrot, hit the parrot against the desk, and then thrown the parrot onto the floor. Now, when you see the sketch, it's obviously just a plastic parrot, which is again part of the sort of farce of this sketch. It's farcical. The characters are ridiculous. The situation is completely ridiculous. And yet they're both dealing with it in a fairly serious kind of way. And it's a plastic parrot. So he's thrown it on the floor. And now that's what I call a dead parrot. I think the shopkeeper is now going to try and argue that it's not actually dead, that it's just resting.
No, it's stunned.
Okay, it's just stunned. Stunned. If someone is stunned, it means that they're sort of shocked. And if you're stunned, it means you're shocked and then you can't move, basically. So he's saying that, no, it's not dead, it's stunned. You just stunned it then. Norwegian blues stun easily.
No, it's stunned.
Look, my lad, I've had just about enough of this. That parrot is definitely deceased. And when I bought it not half an hour ago, you assured me that its lack of movement was due to it being tired and shagged out after a long squat.
When I purchased it not half an hour ago, you assured me that its lack of movement was due to it being tired and shagged out after a long squawk. A squawk is the word for the noise that a parrot would make. You know, like that. That's a squawk. So apparently, when he purchased it earlier, the shopkeeper said, yeah, he's just exhausted. He's tired and shagged out. If someone is shagged out, it means they're exhausted, basically. He's tired and shagged out after a long squawk. So apparently the bird had exhausted itself from going, okay. You're probably listening to this thinking, okay, this is ridiculous. I can't believe this is one of the most celebrated and popular bits of entertainment. I thought the British were an intelligent people. Well, what can I say? I've already said that I can't explain why this is funny. And either you get it or you don't get it. But I think it's worth sort of trying just to enjoy it, just for a bit of light entertainment. As I said, I will play you another version of this sketch once I've finished kind of explaining the words and stuff, which you might find a bit more entertaining. But for now, let's carry on. So you assured me that it was tired and shagged out after a long squawk.
It's probably pining for the fjords.
It's probably pining for the fjords. Pining for the fjords. Okay, now here the shopkeeper is suggesting that the parrot is homesick. Okay, if you're pining for something, it means you're sort of dreaming of something and like missing something. Pining for the fjords. The fjords are areas on the coast of Norway. Okay, fjords, areas where the sea. There are sort of large inlets of seawater coming into the land, fjords. It's a beautiful area of Norway, and you can do boat trips there and so on. It's a beautiful place. So maybe the parrot is feeling homesick. Maybe he's pining for the fjords. But the customer thinks this is ridiculous and responds by going, "Pining for the fjords? What kind of talk is that?"
"Pining for the fjords? What kind of talk is that? Look, where did it fall flat on its back the moment I got it home?"
Why did it fall flat on its back the moment I got it home? So as soon as it got it home, the parrot just fell flat on its back. Flat on its back, that's quite a nice expression. If you fall flat on your back, it means you just fall completely on the ground. Just, I mean, if you imagine if someone passes out, they would fall over flat on their back. Okay. So, why pining for the fjords? What kind of talk is that? Why did it fall flat on its back when the moment I brought it home? I think now the shopkeeper suggests that the Norwegian blue prefers sleeping on its back. Yeah, the Norwegian blue prefers kipping on its back. Kipping means sleeping. Remember that? A kip from the British slang episode a while ago. To kip means to sleep. Yeah, the Norwegian blue prefers kipping on its back.
"The Norwegian blue prefers kipping on its back. It's a beautiful bird, lovely plumage."
"Look, I took the liberty of examining that parrot, and I discovered that the only reason that it had been sitting on its perch in the first place was that it had been nailed there."
"I took the liberty of examining that parrot," meaning I chose, out of my own free will, to examine the parrot. And what I noticed was that the reason it was still stuck to its perch. A perch is the thing that a parrot would hold on to, like a little piece of wood that the parrot sits on. So I noticed that the reason that the parrot was still stuck to its perch was because it had been nailed there. Okay, so he's saying that the shopkeeper must have nailed the parrot onto the perch. So he's suggesting the shopkeeper knew full well that this parrot was dead and that he would nail the parrot to its perch as a way of attempting to make it look like the parrot was still alive. Yes.
"Back. It's a beautiful bird, lovely plumage."
"Look, I took the liberty of examining that parrot, and I discovered that the only reason that it had been sitting on its perch in the first place was that it had been nailed there."
"Well, of course it was nailed there, otherwise it muscled up to those bars and boom."
"Of course it was nailed there, otherwise it would have muscled up to those bars and vroom." Okay, to muscle up to the bars. It's ridiculous saying that a parrot could muscle up to the bars of a cage. If you imagine like a big man, a big muscular man in prison, he would muscle up to the bars, meaning he would sort of like grab the bars with his muscular arms, you know, to muscle up to the bars. All right? So the parrot would muscle up to those bars and vroom. Vroom means it would have escaped, like that. If I hadn't nailed it there, that parrot would have muscled up to them bars and vroom. Meaning, if I hadn't nailed it there, the parrot would have approached the bars, pulled them apart and escaped very quickly. Vroom.
"Look, matey. This parrot wouldn't voom if I put 4,000 bolts through it."
"Look, matey. This parrot wouldn't voom if I put 4,000 volts through it." I think it's pretty clear what that means.
"Matey, this parrot parrot wouldn't voom if I put 4,000 bolts through it. It's bleeding demise.
It's not. It's pining.
It's not pining. It's passed on.
Okay, this is probably the most famous part of this sketch. And this is where John Cleese starts emphasizing the fact that this parrot is definitely dead. It's bleeding demised. It's demised means it's died. It's passed on. It's died. And a number of other ways of saying basically that the parrot has died. It's passed on. It's demised. It's pushing up the daisies and other expressions. Let's have a listen.
It's bleeding demise.
It's not. It's pining.
It's not pining. It's passed on. This parrot is no more. It has ceased to be. It's expired and gone to meet its maker. This is a late parrot. It's a stiff, bereft of life. It rests in peace. If you hadn't nailed it to the perch, it would be pushing up the daisies. It's run down the curtain and joined the choir invisible. This is an ex-parrot.
Okay, let's go through those lines again. There is a script for this sketch on my website. I've taken the script from the internet, and whoever wrote it sort of wrote in also the different... they've tried to express the pronunciation of the characters. So you might see that the spelling is not exactly the same as normal spelling. So instead of he's passed on, it's e's passed on, just the letter E. Anyway, he said, he's not pining, he's passed on. This parrot is no more. If something is no more, then it's finished, right? He has ceased to be. He's expired. Normally we associate expiry with like food, right? An expiry date on a piece of food. Anyway, this parrot has expired. And this parrot has gone to meet his maker. If you go and meet your maker, it's like you go and meet God. So it's just another way of saying that someone's died. He's gone to meet his maker. He's a stiff. A stiff is a dead body, okay? Because dead bodies, they go stiff, don't they? He's a stiff. Bereft of life. If something is bereft of something, it means that it's lacking something or without something. So in this case, the parrot is bereft of life. He rests in peace. You know that the letters R-I-P, R-I-P, that means rest in peace. So he rests in peace. If you hadn't nailed him to the perch, he'd be pushing up the daisies. If someone is pushing up the daisies, it means that they're buried in the ground, okay, dying. And the idea is that because someone's underground, it's like they're pushing up flowers. Daisies are flowers that grow up out of the ground, of course. If you're pushing up the daisies, it just means that you're buried underground, okay? There's some others in this script which are not in that sketch. For example, he's kicked the bucket, he's shuffled off its mortal coil, he's run down the curtain and joined the bleeding choir invisible. I never really understood that phrase, but then he finally says, this is an ex-parrot. I think we all understand that bit.
Parrot wouldn't voom if I put 4,000 bolts through it. It's bleeding demise.
It's not. It's pining.
It's not pining. It's passed on. This parrot is no more. It has ceased to be. It's expired and gone to meet its maker. This is a late parrot. It's a stiff. Bereft of life, it rests in peace. If you hadn't nailed it to the perch, it would be pushing up the daisies. It's run down the curtain and joined the choir invisible. This is an ex-parrot.
Well, I better replace it then.
If you want to get anything done in this country, you've got to complain till you're blue in the mouth.
Sorry, Gov, we're right out of parrots.
Sorry, Gov, I'm right out of parrots. So in the end, it seems the shopkeeper's willing to replace the parrot. He goes into the back. It turns out he doesn't have any parrots left. Sorry, Gov, I'm right out of parrots. I'm right out of parrots, meaning I don't have any parrots left. We're right out of parrots. Sorry, Gov, we're right out of parrots. Normally you'd say, well, we're right out of something else. You wouldn't say parrots. You'd say like, oh, I'm afraid we're right out of shelving units. Yeah, sorry about that. Yeah, I'm afraid we're right out of cheddar sandwiches. We're right out of parrots. Just sounds a bit ridiculous. And as a replacement, he suggests that he has a slug. A slug? Do you know what that is? It's like a snail. You know, a snail. Snail is that slimy creature which has a shell on its back. The French like to eat them. Escargot, for example, a snail. Well, a slug is like a snail without a shell. So, I've got a slug. Does it talk? No.
I see. I get the picture.
I've got a slug.
Does it talk?
Not really, no.
Well, it's scarcely a replacement then, is it?
Does it talk? Well, not really, no. Well, it's scarcely a replacement then, is it? It's scarcely a replacement, meaning it's not really a very good replacement. All right, there you go. I've presented the dead parrot sketch to you. I'd like to play it to you again, but as I mentioned before, I'm going to play you a different version. The version I'm going to play you is from a live performance, and this performance was recorded at least 10 years after they filmed that original sketch that we just listened to. So if you imagine after 10 years of performing this sketch again and again and again, they probably have performed it 100 times. And by this point, they know the sketch well and they are able to emphasize the lines and exaggerate it even more because it's in front of a live audience in a theater. They're exaggerating. It's much more theatrical. I find this one to be a lot funnier. So let's listen to this. They also change it a little bit and it's slightly random. And in fact, you will hear Michael Palin, the shopkeeper. He's really trying not to laugh. And if you watch the video, you can see his face. He's like trying not to laugh because John Cleese is being so over the top and so ridiculous. I really, really enjoy watching this video. Anytime I feel like a little bit depressed or something, I can just watch this video. It always cheers me up. So listen to the live version of the dead parrot sketch now.
I wish to register a complaint.
Sorry, we're closed for lunch.
Never mind that, my lad. I wish to complain about this parrot that I purchased not half an hour ago from this very boutique.
Oh, yes, the Norwegian blue. What's wrong with it?
I'll tell you what's wrong with it, my lad. It's dead. That's what's wrong with it.
No, he's resting.
Oh, matey, I know a dead parrot when I see one. But I'm looking at one right now.
No, he's not dead, Squire. He's resting. Remarkable bird, the Norwegian blue, isn't it, eh? Beautiful plumage.
The plumage don't end with it. He's stone dead.
No, he's resting.
All right, then, if he's resting, I'll wake him up. Hello, Mr. Polly Parrot. I've got a nice fresh cuttlefish for you if you wake up.
Is there, he moved.
No, he didn't. That was you.
Oh, there was!
Yes,
oh,
you did. Did. Hello, Polly! Awake to Testing. This is your 9 o'clock alarm call. Now, that's what I call a dead parrot.
He's stunned.
Stunned?
Yeah! You stunned him just as he was waking up. Norwegian blue's not easily.
Now, listen, matey, I've had enough of this. That parrot is definitely deceased. And when I purchased it not half an hour ago, you assured me that its total lack of movement was due to it being tarred and shagged out following a prolonged squawk.
Oh, he's probably pining for the field.
Pining for the field? Nothing to laugh at. He finally falls flat on his back and
moment I got him home.
The Norwegian blue prefers keeping on his back. Remark my bird, eh, squire? Beautiful plume, eh?
I took the liberty of examining that bird when I got it home, and I discovered the only reason it had been sitting on its perch in the first place was that it had been nailed there.
Oh, but of course it were nailed there. If I hadn't nailed that bird down, it would have muzzled up to them bars, bent them apart with its beak, and boom!
Boom! Mate, this parrot wouldn't boom if you put 4 million bolts through it! His bleeding demise!
No, no! He's pining!
He's not pining, he's past all! This parrot is no more! He has ceased to be! It's a stiff! He snuffed it! Bereft of life, he rests in peace! Is indubitably extinct! This is an ex-parrot!
Alright, now how about this? Margaret Thatcher doing the dead parrot sketch at the Conservative Party conference. Yes, the Prime Minister, Margaret Thatcher, actually said some of the lines from the dead parrot sketch in one of her speeches. A little bit of context for you. She's talking about the new logo for one of her rival parties, the Liberal Democrats. The Liberal Democrats have a logo which is a bird. And the logo was new when Thatcher did this speech. And so she used it as an opportunity to make fun of the Liberal Democrats and their new logo by quoting some of the lines from the dead parrot's sketch.
Now that brings me to the Liberal Party. I gather that during the last few days, there have been some ill-natured jokes about their new symbol, a bird of some kind, adopted by the Liberal Democrats at Blackpool. Politics is a serious business, and one should not lower the tone unduly. So I will say only this of the Liberal Democrat symbol and of the party it symbolizes. This is an ex-parrot. It is not merely stunned, it has ceased to be, expired, and gone to meet its maker. It is a parrot no more. It has rung down the curtain and joined the choir invisible. This is a late parrot. And now for something completely different.
So that just about wraps up this episode about Monty Python's Flying Circus. I didn't really cover all of it. I mean, it's impossible to cover all of it in just one episode. I'd love to go into more detail and hear sketches from the other members of the group, and I intend to do that in the future. Well done for listening all the way to the end of this episode of Luke's English Podcast. I think that if you did listen all the way to the end, that your concentration paid off. Because I think it got better as it went along, don't you think? I'll do more stuff with sketches by Monty Python in the future, but for this episode, for now, it's almost goodbye. I would just like to remind you to visit the webpage for this episode where you can find links. You can then check out Monty Python's shows, DVDs, CDs and things on Amazon. And you can also just see videos on their YouTube page. If you feel like it, please do leave a comment on teacherluke.co.uk. Tell me what you think of the parrot sketch. Did you find it funny? Did you understand it? What are your thoughts? I'd like to know Whatever your opinions are, please leave your comments there. I'm always curious to hear back from my listeners in some way. So that's it for this episode. I'll speak to you again very, very, very soon. But for now, it's goodbye. Bye, bye, bye. Thanks again for being a brilliant person and listening to Luke's English Podcast. For more information, go to teacherluke.co.uk.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
If you enjoyed this episode of Luke's English Podcast, consider signing up for Luke's English Podcast Premium. You'll get regular premium episodes with stories, vocabulary, grammar, and pronunciation teaching from me, and the usual moments of humour and fun. Plus, with your subscription, you will be directly supporting my work and making this whole podcast project possible. For more information about Luke's English Podcast Premium, go to teacherluke.co.uk/premium info.